We are excited to be sponsored by Whitebook. Teachers, are you looking for a cost-effective whiteboard solution for distance learning and in your classroom? These specially coated sheets of dry erase paper are not only amazing for solving math problems, creating anchor charts, and writing schedules, but they also allow you to save and share your work easily. Marie, you've been using some of their whiteboards in your classroom. What do you think?
Yeah, this is a tool that I didn't even know I wanted or needed in my classroom, but it's been awesome. I've been using the flip chart and it's replaced my chart paper. What's great is I can put my anchor charts on them or daily schedule. And when I'm done with it, I can just erase it and use it again.
Thanks again to Whitebook for sending us some cool products to check out. Right now, Teachers Talking Tech listeners can get 30% off and help support our podcast by going to whitebook.com/teacherstalkingtech. That's WIPEBOOK.com/teacherstalkingtech. Hello and welcome to Teachers Talking Tech. This is Eric Robinson, and I'm really excited to bring you my conversation with Michael McDowell. He is a superintendent of the Ross School District in California, but not only that, he is an author. He's written many books about project-based learning and some other things around innovative teaching practices. And then he runs workshops, does keynotes. And then I ran across him on Edutopia, where he had written an article about project-based learning and how teachers can still deliver project-based learning even during distance learning or during hybrid. And I thought this was really important because I think for the last year, almost a year now, you know, my mind has been more wrapped around just staying afloat and just helping teachers with distance learning. But I think in the long term, we need to keep our eyes on the prize, just moving forward and making innovations in teaching. And it was just so exciting to hear his passion for project-based learning. And he really makes project-based learning accessible. It's not something where, oh yeah, you have to have a whole new curriculum. You have to be an expert in everything project-based learning to deliver this. It's more of a message of any teacher can do it. It's just more of setting the stage to make it happen. So I hope you enjoy the interview as much as I did, and let's get right to it. This is my interview with Michael McDowell. All right, well, I'm here with Michael McDowell, and he serves as the superintendent of the Ross School District in California. Dr. McDowell has authored best-selling books, presented keynotes and workshops, and provided practical tools and resources for thousands of educators and leaders on almost every continent around the world. He's the author of Rigorous PBL by Design, The Lead Learner, and many other books. Welcome, Mr. McDowell. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you here on the show. And I asked you on because I was reading through Edutopia articles and your article just popped out at me. And the title is Three Keys to Making Project-Based Learning Work During Distance Learning. And just the idea that we can be talking about, hey, this isn't a time where we can just tread water. This is a time where we can still move forward with educational practices. So I love seeing that. What was the, is this the first time you've written about PBL, or is this like a lifelong mission of yours or a love?
Yeah, so I'd say it's a lifelong mission. And I would say that I find project-based learning great because it really helps students find relevance in their learning. I find it incredibly engaging for them. And I think that this is a moment in time where we could take a step back and say, what could we really do to enhance students' learning? And so the impetus for that particular article was to help teachers hopefully to step back and say, hey, I could probably run a project, or hey, I could try something a little bit new to get students a bit more inspired when they have to sit at home and you're competing against the PlayStation 5. It's like, maybe this is something that we could take a look at.
Yeah, I feel like this is both a time where we're learning how to teach again, but we're also just learning that we can still push the envelope a little bit, and that's okay. It's okay to keep learning and teaching exciting, even though it might feel different. I think that, the first thing I want to ask you about is, why do you think it's important that teachers focus on PBL in the midst of this, unprecedented change that we've gone through? Why is it still important to focus on that?
Well, I think there's three kind of key things that come to my mind. I think one, that anytime we're in a position of fear and a position of uncertainty, you know, our knee-jerk reaction is to kind of like go back to what's safe. And I think that sometimes what that means is that the things around engagement, the things around collaboration, checking for understanding, all of those things that we know how to do and we know are good practices, we sometimes let those things go because we retreat. And I think that the idea behind thinking about project-based learning is to say it's okay to actually go against that kind of fight or flight mode that we probably feel like. And our kids feel like that too, right? They want to just say, just tell me what to do, even though that might not be that engaging. So for me, this whole idea of let's look at project-based learning is to say, let's counter that instinct that we have. The second is that not only are those practices good for engagement, but they have this really high effect on student learning. And so trying to bring those things back and saying, it, you know, let's have students write. Let's have students, let's use a protocol to have students actually talk to one another about all of these really key issues that are out in the world today. I mean, I when you're talking about the pandemic, when you're talking about George Floyd, when you're talking about climate change, all of these things that are ubiquitous in our world, it seems only natural to help students process this. And we can usually, within, you know, a couple degrees of separation, connect it to pretty key core standards. And that brings me, I think, to the third piece, which is the reason why I find problem and project-based learning so important, not just because of the engagement aspect. I find it really important because it enables students to transfer, to see why, how mathematics can apply to what's happening in science, can apply to their own lives. And so the more we're using problem and project-based learning as one mechanism for instruction, I think it helps our kids just see like, oh, I see how that, you know, that idea around, you know, addition applies to this statistics problem that we're looking at in terms of like the spread of COVID, or like, this is why we need to understand multiplication. And so to me, I think getting students engaged in that, in that way is not only cognitively engaging for them, I also think that they learn a ton. And I also think that teachers might enjoy that a bit more than, you know, that fear of like, I just need to share this because we're not going to cover stuff, to step back and say, actually, let's flip that a bit and make it a little bit more engaging.
Yeah, I know that, like, for myself as a lower L teacher, I was always a little nervous to get started with project-based learning because I saw it as this giant undertaking where you needed a huge curriculum that was all, you know, based around it. But it really is as simple as giving kids some agency, which really is what got me interested in project-based learning, was giving my kids choice and voice. And I know in my second grade class, we did just a little project where we designed our own tiny house, you know, and it really, the transfer was amazing to see where kids were doing the math, they were doing the science, reading, all those things naturally. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. Really love it. And I think that, like you said, that idea that right now is not only a good time, it's the perfect time when some of those walls and those things that were guarded before are down, you know, these barriers to innovation. So, you know, in your article, you talked about three things specifically to distance learning, although these could probably be just great practices with PBL in general, but you had three keys that you wanted teachers to really consider when they're thinking about project-based learning with their kids. So the first one was focusing on a challenge. So could you go into that a little bit, explain what you mean by that?
So the way that I think of a challenge is I think of giving students a problem that requires some type of application. So if we're learning something in, let's say, science, we're learning about food chains, giving students an actual real-world problem to say, what happens if an invasive species comes in, or what happens if, you know, we have these, you know, drastic wildfires. And so now we all of this grassland has been taken away. So giving students the relevance and the rationale for something that they might need to go and learn. So I think that's one kind of challenge. The other part of that challenge is to make sure students see a gap between what they know and what they need to know. So to me, it's showing students like, hey, we're about to go learn about food chains. What do you already know about it? So that's when the pre-assessments come in. So students actually see, one, there's a relevance for this problem. But two, that they also see like, hey, there's a gap in what I know and what I need to know in order to learn that problem. I think by doing those types of things, it actually gets students to focus more on their cognitive engagement. Like, oh, I don't know this. I need to like think about this, as opposed to kind of sitting back and saying, all right, I think I just need to take notes on this because there may be a test or they may ask me a question. That's the whole idea around challenge. Give students this kind of cognitive wobble between like, all right, this is what I know, and this is what I need to know.
Yeah, I think if you ask most kids K-12, they would tell you they already know everything that they're being taught, right? That feeling that like, I already know this. Why am I even sitting here? Well, there is a big difference and a shift in the thinking of a student when it's like, all right, you already know this, but what do you want to learn about this? Or what do you think you could find from this exploration? It's just such a different way. It's the way we all naturally as humans come at problem solving, right? It just seems way more natural.
So I think specifically with problem project-based learning, one of the most interesting things that, you know, that kind of led me to the rigorous PBL work is that the substantial amount of research that's out there actually shows that problem project-based learning doesn't have this really great effect if we don't utilize really great teaching practices and have students involved in really rich cognitive tasks that include reading, writing, and talking. And so I think a big part of this is create that gap for students where they're like, oh, I don't know that. And then have them go into reading, writing, and talking. And I think of the three that I think that we miss the most, especially in distance learning, is the talking. You know, using some protocols, whether it's, you know, doing a jigsaw, whether it's doing a Socratic seminar, whether you're using breakout rooms or saying, okay, this person's going to speak and then this person's going to speak, using like final word protocols, all of these protocols to get students to start to talk about their learning. The more we do that, the more they get emotionally engaged, but then there's that cognitive engagement of like, I really need to know this so that I can apply it to what's happening to the sea otters, what's happening to the elephants, whatever it is that we're taking a look at, that they can then apply that.
Yeah, and I think that what you're talking about there is all the learning that happens in the middle. I think a lot of times when teachers think about project-based learning, they think about the end, right? They think about what's the project going to look like at the end, where really we all know the learning all happens in the middle. It's all those discussions, all those little revelations that kids have. That's where that magic happens. So the second thing that you were, is a second key, you were talking about focusing on clarity. So I think this one was probably the hardest for me to wrap my head around. But what do you mean by focusing on clarity?
Yeah, of course. So a couple of interesting things about clarity. So clarity has been found by research to have one of the highest effects that we've ever seen in terms of student learning. And for novices, this is really hard. So it's for experts, we sit down and we're sitting there going, this can't be that hard because I'm being really clear with kids. But for novices to decipher what the level of expectations is actually quite difficult. So to give an example, if I was teaching food chains and I wanted students to, and I was going to do a project around wolf reintroduction about, you know, what happens to food chains if we bring wolves back to different parts of the United States. And so we just saw that the wolves were reintroduced into Colorado just a few weeks ago. The problem is that when I share that and I say, hey, we're going to study wolves and we're going to look at food chains, what kids are going to think about are wolves. They're not going to think about food chains. But the challenge is that in project-based learning, we want students to be able to transfer. And what we want students to be able to transfer is the notion of food chains to not just wolves, but to kiwi or the elephants or the sea lions. So if they don't have that clarity for the content versus the context, they're unable to transfer. And so a big part of teaching, and I would say especially in problem and project-based learning, is helping students decipher what they're actually learning versus the context in which they're learning it. Gotcha. That's why when I argue for project-based learning, we really need to give students more than one context at the beginning of a project. Don't do a wolf project. Do a project around different animal situation, you know, different habitats or different animals, so that the students step back from both of those situations and say, okay, this is about food chains in terms of this situation and this situation.
Gotcha. And that's a big shift because, you know, in teaching school, right, you learn you must state the, you know, you always want to state what you're trying to teach kids a certain number of times during your lesson. But that's very teacher focused, where, yeah, it sounds like from your explanation, you really want to start with the big idea and then you have kids decide where their focuses are going to be within that big idea.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think one, it's showing them more than one situation so that they can get the big idea. And then I think the second piece, which is what you were just talking about, is that I don't believe clarity can come from a teacher. I believe it has to be co-constructed. I mean, we've all sent an email out that's like one sentence and people still send emails back saying, I don't understand it. If you're like, let's all meet at 8 o'clock, people are like, is that 8 a.m.? Is that p.m.? Is that tomorrow? Right. And you're like, I just sent one sentence and why can't people get my overall message? To me, that should be the beginning of a project, is that the beginning should be messy and the end should be a bit messy. So the beginning should be about like, hey, we've got these problems. What do we think's going on? students are helping co-construct, you know, rubrics and what that would be built, the driving question around that. The middle, like you had just talked about, should actually not be that messy. That's when we take our great teaching tools we've used for a long time, and we use them to build the knowledge that students need so that when they get to the end, where they start coming up with different solutions and things like that, those become messy again. And I think what we've done in project-based learning in the past is that the beginning and the end have been really concrete and structured, and the middle's been messy. And we leave as teachers, and I'm a high school, you know, my background was in high school teaching. That's where we kind of run away from projects because we're like, they're not going to learn the content. Whereas I think if you flip it, you get a higher level of clarity, a greater level of impact in terms of student learning.
So your third key talks about a learning culture, which is you've just got to have that in place. Otherwise, your kids aren't going to want to talk to one another. They don't feel like they have any agency, right? So you talk about the importance of that. What can a teacher do to start building that culture right from day one?
So I think the first thing that teachers can do, a very concrete example, is to have students looking at multiple examples of work and starting to see how a student got better over time. So if it's the same student, they could actually see different drafts. So like I love Ron Berger's Austin's Butterfly, where first and second graders are looking at example pieces of work and coming and saying, how did he get better over time? What did feedback do to help him get better? The more that we do that, what it starts to do is it starts to get students to be familiar with this notion of progress versus proficiency. Right. So it's not about getting an A. It's not about, you know, being perfect up front, but it's about how do I continue to grow over time? And I think that one of the challenges with project-based learning is that our culture that we've been trying to focus on for a long period of time is about building a product. And to me, a learning culture is about a process of learning, but no one is going to be at that level up front. And even if you are at some A level, you still need to get more than 1 year's growth in 1 year's time. So to me, I think showing examples, talking about things like the learning pit, talking about our own risks and challenges that we've taken, modeling and practicing ways in which we give feedback to other students. And to like one example we do here is that when students bring a piece of work home to their parents, they have to bring another piece of work to show their rough draft to their final to say, here's how I grew. Because I said to parents in a meeting about a couple months ago, I said, you know, is 100% a good grade? And they said, yes. And I'm like, but what if that was the pre-assessment and the post-assessment was the same? What now is that a great grade? And so changing the narrative around, it's around progress versus proficiency or products, and then giving kids tangible examples of how that's used is key. The other thing I would just say is that one of the things we spend a lot of time here on is giving kids a language of learning. So we use a very specific language to talk about complexity, surface, I know things, deep, I relate things, transfer, I apply things. We do that with our kindergartners all the way up through eighth grade. So they have a language to talk about their learning, which helps us create a culture that's what we're about.
That's super smart. And you really caught me with, that's one of my favorite sayings, is it's all about the process, not the product. And that's something to keep in mind, whether it is a 20-minute quick project-based learning lesson, whether it's a long, multi-step or multifaceted project. I love that kind of way of thinking. And I know, like with my second graders, one of the things that we did that was successful kind of in looking at that growth was my kids helped me to come up with our own rubric. So rather than having everything be teacher-driven, the kids would help come up with a rubric. And as we went along and they saw great examples of good work, our rubrics got better. And it wasn't because I just kept on stepping it up. The kids would step them up on their own. So I don't know what you're feeling on like rubrics is or using rubrics for growth, but that worked well for us.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. I think the way you did that is spot on. I think giving kids rubrics without their level of involvement is not very helpful for a novice. Because rubrics I think it's this challenge between experts and novices. We look at a rubric and we're like, that makes perfect sense. That thing is great. But we have the knowledge behind it. We have a lot of background knowledge. Kids don't. So the more that kids co-construct and then it builds over time, the more students are going to be able to use it. I always come back to my absolute favorite study ever in education comes from a gentleman named Graham Nuttall, who wrote a book called The Hidden Lives of Learners. And he put lapel mics on kids' lapels and listened to them speak for 5 years. And what he found is that the classroom is largely hidden from teachers. 80% of the feedback, and they also, so 80% of the classroom is hidden, 80% of the feedback kids give and receive are from their friends, and 80% of that feedback is usually wrong. But when you can co-construct, you can show kids examples, you can build a rubric together, you can start to model some feedback, what happens is that that peer-to-peer influence doesn't change, it never will, but the accuracy between students will. And to me, that's the kind of culture you want to create. And whether you're in project-based learning or not, that's the other part I'd say around culture. You don't always have to do a project, but like the practice you were just talking about, like building rubrics, you can do that in any lesson or any unit. And then when you go into project-based learning, it just fits nicely within that inquiry-based platform.
Yeah, that's what I found is starting small as the teacher, where I just did, hey, you know, we're going to learn about how seeds travel, and just taking it and turning it into a short project-based learning lesson, where it was a lot less of me talking, a lot more of kids talking. Once we got to larger ideas and we wanted to do bigger projects, it was a natural transition, and it made it easier on me as the teacher. It felt a lot lower risk, which I know with test scores and other things that are thrown at teachers, that is the thing that they always go back to as an excuse of why they can't start project-based learning, right? It's like they're jumping off that cliff and they're worried about evaluations and tests and things like that. Like, what do you do in your district to help to calm those fears that teachers might have?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's a fair assessment. And I think that that stress is very real for almost every teacher I know, and including myself when I was teaching. I think there's these underpinning myths about PBL that we need to just dispel. I mean, I think one of them is projects have to be 4 weeks or 5 weeks long, and that projects or teachers have complete hands off. And it's just like, kids, good luck, go forth and learn math. This also, this idea that you need to be in groups of four for like an extended period of time, I think is incorrect. I think collaboration's key, but that's something that is key whether or not we're in problem in project-based learning. So to me, I think it's finding those places, like you could take a math lesson, like let's just say that we've got a math lesson and you've got a word problem at the end of that lesson or at the end of that unit, right? Take that word problem, put it up front, give kids that word problem and say, what do you think we're learning? Let's try to solve this problem. What do you know? What do you need to know? And then saying, okay, based on that, now we're going to go, we're going to learn that core content like we always do. We're going to come back and we're going to come back to that word problem and then see if we can transfer it to a different word problem. To me, that kind of inquiry-based, that kind of problem-centered way of doing this kind of work gets to that transfer level. And so to me, the thing I would say to teachers is, if you give yourself 1 or 2 days, which I still know is a lot, to like anchor the problem up front, and then come back to it, you start to build this problem in project-based learning and you start to see where it could fit within the schedule you already have. And that brings me to the last myth, which is you have to blow up everything you already did, right? Teachers are doing good things. It's a question of, can we do even better things with an inquiry? And that's where you start saying, maybe we could have a couple more days. Maybe we could do the problem up front. And these smaller sequence of problems, I think, is something that we could start. And then maybe as we develop some confidence on that, we could say, you know what, I see that we could get the content we need and do a bigger project. I think going small, you know, going slow to going fast, to me is the way to approach this work.
So obviously there's some obstacles during the pandemic, you know, people are using Zoom, you know, they're hybrid, they're all these different things. What are, you know, maybe what's a tip or two that you give teachers if they don't feel like, you know, maybe it's hard for them to think of how they could do this when they're not face to face with all their kids?
Yep. So I think the first thing that I would do is, I think when you think of the I do, you do, we do cycle, right? Like, what do I do as a teacher? What do the students do? And what do we do? I think that one thing we could start with is giving students like a problem up front that they could do asynchronously, where they could look at the problem. They could write down, here's what I know about the problem. Here's what I need to know. Here might be some potential next steps. I think that those are just a couple things that we could have students do right up front. And that could be a math word problem that you give them, knowing full well they don't know it. That could be giving them an exemplar of student work that they're about to write about and they don't know what that is, to say, what do you think you need to know on this? So that when we get together, we can start with the we do. I think the key thing that we've lost in the pandemic is this notion of we do, of the students and the teachers working together. And I get it. It's time. We're time sensitive. It's kind of like, I got to tell you guys this stuff, and then you go do your stuff. And I think if we can give them a little bit of that pre-work, give them kind of a cool problem to take a look at or a word problem to just process. They don't have to answer it, but what do they think this is all about? and then coming in and then using just a very easy structured protocol, like a jigsaw or like a whip around or something like that, where they could come in and then just do a quick share out. I think that can make a huge change in the way that we start that collaborative work that we'd want to see in prom and project-based learning.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I love talking project-based learning. It gets me all fired up. I feel like I just want to jump right back in the classroom right now and start doing things. but I appreciate your insight on this. And I definitely would recommend to anybody to check out, start with some of your articles on Edutopia. Just search for Michael McDowell and Edutopia. That's a good like launching point. And then people can find your books and some other things that they can check out as well. Would you share your socials or other places that folks can find you?
Sure. Yeah. So if you go to at mcdowell13 or at Hinge Education, those would be our handles. And so that's a great place for, I think those are our social media. I think we use Twitter, and you can go to our website at hingeeducation.org if you'd like to learn more.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it was great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Whitebook.com. And teachers, if you're looking for a whiteboard solution, like, I don't know, maybe you're teaching from home right now, you're teaching in your basement or in your bedroom. If you're looking for whiteboards that you can stick to your wall, stick to the door, or any other type of whiteboard solution, you can get them at Whitebook. And Teachers Talking Tech listeners, you can get 30% off. Just go to whitebook.com/teachers talking tech. That's WIPEBOOK.com/teachers talking tech. Another way you can help the podcast is by leaving us a rating or review wherever you get your podcast. We really do appreciate it. Also, you can reach out to us. Just send an email or a voicemail to teacherstalkingtech@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at @teachsometech. And then we also have a YouTube and Facebook page as well. All right, thanks a lot for the listen. Hope you have a great week, and we'll be coming to you soon again. This has been Eric Robinson with Teachers Talking Tech. See ya.